This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Hancock and Kelly, the part of Michael Kelly being played by Jeff Smith. Good to see you, pal.
Just take off about a foot of height and you'll mistake me for Michael.
Oh, you're much more handsome, though.
He's on an airplane. Imagine that.
We're just talking about music. So I didn't know you're so into music, John.
That's cool. My gosh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm a composer.
I knew you were a musician, but I didn't know the extent of it.
So. Yeah, yeah. I actually composed the music that my daughter and I went down the aisle together.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
How about
that's
that? Cool. String that's quartet. Cool. I orchestrated it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to rip that off, and it's going to be awful. Did you guys see, just you made me think of it, that story where science nerds have taken a spider web and they digitized it, and then they turned it into music? See if you can find that, Rach, or have Mike Anderson find it for us.
Spider web music.
Yes.
I like that.
And it sounds exactly like you think. It sounds like your nightmare. It's so really cool. And then Jeff Smith, you're a drummer.
I am a drummer. Yeah. I played for years with, you know, Dave Drebes, who writes that political newsletter, Missouri
Scout. What does he play?
He sings and he plays piano.
Huh.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Is he more of a jazz guy?
No, he's like power pop, I would say.
Yeah.
And kind of... You know, he's soulful, you know.
No, I mean you. Were you more of a jazz drummer or rock and roll?
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, man, I love it. And, you know, the minute my family leaves the house, I go, you know, whenever the rare moments that I'm alone, especially during the pandemic in my house with no
there
kids or anybody there, I go to the basement and just knock out a couple songs.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's so weird about my mom and dad were World War II, Hard Hat Joe.
Yeah.
Spanking at a drop of a hat, do not make too much noise. But I had a drum set for 10 years and I played it all day and they just didn't care.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's one way that you can, like, legally, when you're a little boy, like, get all your aggression
just
out.
Beat the living crap out of something. Yeah.
That's probably what it was. Like, look, he's not out here with us. So just whatever he's
doing. They may have been happy that you were doing it. I have never been annoyed by. My daughter Grace, who is her primary instrument is violin, she's played it her whole life. And even in the early days when she was just learning,
it
was screeching a little bit. I always love to hear that sound coming from down the hall or from in the basement.
Like, my son's a drummer too, and it was so great. He was far enough away upstairs that I could hear it, but I wasn't annoyed, and I could hear him trying to learn how to do triplets. And like, he would get it, and you're just like, right on.
Nice.
There you go.
Just watching your kids develop an appreciation for music, especially if any of the music that you liked, is so rewarding.
My kids both quit their piano lessons. They had a great team, Mr. Finger, and he was the third of five children.
That's what
ironically.
I called my uncle.
Yeah, right. But they both quit.
Were you like a taskmaster?
No, I wasn't going to force it. But my son now regrets it. And so he comes over to the house he sits down and... knocks out whatever, you know, he can.
You know who else is a pianist?
Who?
Yeah, Rach? Well, I'm very similar to your son. I took some lessons.
Rach, what do you play?
I just piano.
I play ragtime. That's my genre.
See, I mostly played I mostly played like hymns and stuff growing up.
Hymns.
I was raised in a Baptist church, It was like, you're going to be the new piano player for the church, and that obviously did not work out.
Have you ever played "Lo, How a Rose Air Blooming" on the piano?
Mm-mm.
It's the most gorgeous harmony. Pull it up, learn it. It'll blow you away.
I'm similar to your kids. I took lessons, and I just couldn't make myself have the real patience for it. And now I really, really wish that I would have stuck with it more.
Should have called Mr. Finger.
She's being way too humble. She actually played in the Chuck E. Cheese band for a while.
Whoa.
So
I'm actually the reason they broke up.
You're the Yoko Ono of the Chuck E. Cheese band.
That's fun. Let's see. Where do we want to start? Where do you guys want to start? Jeff, what's on your mind?
You know, I've been tweeting a fair amount about the U.S. Senate race.
Oh, yeah, he has. Let's
do it.
I have some thoughts on that.
Share them.
Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I obviously the state has certainly trended Republican over the last decade. And, you know, some of my colleagues on the Democratic side have gotten a kick out of, like, boosting Eric Greitens, thinking that they can pull a Todd Akin again by promoting the least electable Republican in the Republican primary.
But then,
as a means of thinking, hey, well, we'll win the general election in the same kind of very strategic and savvy way that Claire McCaskill did, I think that would be an idiotic strategy for Democrats, both because the state has trended so Republican over the last decade that I think any Republican is still the favorite in the general.
Especially in a Democratic midterm, right?
Especially in a midterm. Yeah, I mean, the last 75 years of elections tell us that when the president controls, the same party controls the presidency and both chambers of Congress, then the midterms are extraordinarily difficult for the party of the president. So you're going to have Republican, you know, kind of the wind at Republicans' back in a state where the wind has already been at Republicans' back. And so I think it's just too risky to, you know, the prospect of Eric Greitens in the U.S. Senate is way too risky. And I'd like to see a strong, you know, unified Republican party trying to make sure that someone who succeeds Roy Blunt can be an effective senator for the state. And I don't think Eric Greitens can do that.
So you would rather lose the seat than have Eric Greitens win it. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you know, in a perfect world, I'd love for Democrats to be able to win in Missouri. But, you know, given, again, as John noted, being in a midterm and the state and then the climate in the state where it is, you know, some people say, well, what about Georgia? You know, we won those two Senate seats in Georgia. Georgia has experienced 20 years of in-migration into Atlanta proper and the Atlanta suburbs that's been, you know, made the state a near majority minority state. Missouri has not. You know, the country is like 17% Latino.
Right.
Missouri is like 2.5% or 3%
That's
Latino.
Exactly. See, we used to be a bellwether state, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But with the expansion of the Latino population across the country, it hasn't happened in Missouri, and we're no longer a bellwether state for that reason. And so that's a really prescient point there, Smith.
Thank you.
So what faction of the Republican Party, if you can name it, if you can tell this, are supporting Greitens? Like, what kind of Republican is saying, yeah, he's my guy?
You know, I guess people that aren't bothered by, you know, sexual violence against women. I don't know. You know, I'm at a loss.
Answer.
But, you know, I mean, I think if you're going to be honest about it, and I'm not impugning every Republican, I have, you know, standard disclaimer, I have good friends who are Republicans.
Some of my best friends. Yeah.
But look, he starts out with more name ID than anybody, and not all of it is positive, but in the wake of Donald Trump, in the way that Donald Trump has, you know, called everything fake news that wasn't good to him, and, you know, the establishment was always out to get him, you know, Greitens is trying to follow that same type of, you know, rhetoric, you know, running against, you know, the system, and he starts out with more name ID than anybody else. And so in this early polling, we shouldn't be shocked to see that he's ahead of everyone. But he's had the field to himself for the last year, talking about his self-proclaimed vindication and exoneration.
He's been exonerated, he says.
Yeah, which, you know, is a bunch of crap. Because if you actually read the fine print of that, you know, nobody exonerated him from
anything.
Yeah, of anything, really. He paid one of the biggest fines in state history for his campaign finance issues. More importantly, that And that Missouri Ethics Commission decision had nothing to do with his former mistress, who both parties agreed in the state legislature. A bipartisan committee agreed. She testified credibly.
Under oath.
Under oath that she had sexually.
Four times.
Yes. And he refused to testify.
That is correct.
So that was pretty compelling. So in any case, I think he's at his ceiling.
Smith here makes a good point.
Kelly will never be back in. Hope we can do Sunday mornings with him. So
I'm curious for John's take.
Well, we probably are short on time. I've got a really interesting, to me, political science theory about where the Republican Party is, if you want to get to it.
We'll do it when we come back.
You're listening to The Dave Glover Show on KMOX.
Back, guys, 319 DGS. Happy Friday to everyone. Getting a little gloomy out there. Going to be kind of a rainy weekend. John Hancock is here from Hancock and Kelly. My buddy Jeff Smith is here filling in for Michael Kelly. Just talking about the Senate race with Greitens. And, John, you had a theory.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people assume that the division in the Republican Party is of recent vintage. Donald Trump kind of came and the narrative is that he, you know, subsumed the Republican Party with a different kind of conservatism than, say, Ronald Reagan had brought in the 1980s. And my contention is this division has been present from day one in the party. So if you go back to the 1840s, after the Whigs fizzled out and they were a war-making party, you had a party called the American Party, also known as the Know-Nothings
Party.
And the Know-Nothings were noted for being staunchly anti-immigration. They were very anti-Catholic. They kind of gave lip service to anti-slavery, but they built a base, tried to build a base in the South talking about worker rights. And that didn't last long. And then within just a few years, the Republican Party was formed. And that was a very moralistic party that was staunchly abolitionist in its view and much more closely aligned to the business interests of the Northeast, what was emerging to be the industrial and the banking establishment. Those two factions basically formed the anti-Democrats. And they came together in the 1860s and really held sway for decades after the Civil War. But those two very disparate factions in Republicanism continued on. And so you get to the 1952 presidential contest, and you had Robert Taft, the senator from Ohio, who was an isolationist. He didn't want us to be entangled in all these foreign wars and so forth. Very, very contentious convention that year against Dwight Eisenhower, who eventually won out, and he was more of an interventionist on foreign policy. And those two basic factions have been managed and around for all these years. And Donald Trump really brought back the old American Party kind of motif and ran with it. But it's not a new phenomenon. That's my theory.
That's interesting. And you being a political scientist, you buy that? You agree with it?
I'm going to return the favor and say Hancock's exactly right. but no, I mean, I think there's been this a movement, and to kind of extend what John just said, you know, which I think was a really good reading of history, and take it through like the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. What you saw over those decades was a difference between where the two parties used to be divided primarily on economics.
Yeah.
And you saw that begin to disintegrate for a couple of reasons. Number one, more affluent suburban people were attracted to Clintonism,
right,
which was basically like, hey, I am concerned about the debt. We're not the old school labor Democrats that just want to spend.
The era of big government is over.
Is over. Yeah. Exactly. Very important. At the same time, Republicans were making deeper inroads into the South. They were doing better and better with less well-educated voters. And what you have seen over the last 30 years in American politics is one where the real schism, at least among white voters, is now tending to be more around education level than economics. So, you know, whereas, you know, the Democratic Party continues to attract more and more people with graduate degrees. The Republican Party does better and better and better with people who only have a high school degree or an associate's degree.
Or labor union voters.
Or even union voters.
Union voters have gravitated towards the Republican Party in recent years.
Yeah, so
this
Trump,
is fascinating.
So Trump was not, you know, he didn't transform anything, but he accelerated a lot of trends that had been in place in the 80s, 90s, yep. and 2000s yep. and really turbocharged them with his nativist appeals around immigration.
And the playbook for Trump was actually written by Rick Santorum. When he talked about Republicans being the party of working class voters, which yeah. had never really been the case.
What if, let's just play house for a minute. What if Trump hadn't been quite so Trumpy with just the outlandish behaviors and the tweets and all that kind of stuff? But he kept the same policies and the same general approach. Do you feel like, John, this could have been the wave of the future for a while?
Could have. I mean, he probably would have won. I mean, the two things, you know, just the personal appeal, the people that love Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But not everybody loves Donald Trump. And a lot of people are turned off by his approach. So that, and then the other thing was COVID response. I think had he been more, he lost some older voters with his COVID response. And the older voters were kind of bedrock Republican, especially bedrock Trump Republican voters. And he didn't lose them all. I mean, but he lost enough of them that it mattered. Those two things, you know, a slightly different tone, which that's just not who he is. So that was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But a slightly different tone and a different kind of approach, seriousness to COVID, I think he would have been very hard to beat.
Look, so Democrats like to say Joe Biden won by 7 million votes, and he did. But with the Electoral College, Joe Biden won by about 43,000 votes, you know, spread across
right.
four states.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it in that way, I think Donald Trump could have won, but for 91 minutes of that campaign. 90 minutes, that first debate which he was totally obnoxious
yeah.
and lost some of the support that had been kind of coming back towards him from independents. And then the 1 minute when he walked up onto the balcony and tore off his mask, you know, and get, you know, just kind of exhibited absolutely no empathy for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose lives had been lost and the millions who had lost a loved one. Had he instead just given a 30-second speech then, instead of being so defiant, and said, look, you know, this was tough, man. And I want to thank the doctors and nurses that helped me, you know, bring me back to health. And man, this gave me real insight into what people are going through. And now I'm going to redouble my efforts to find a vaccine. I think he wins.
Such a fascinating figure, though, in American politics, because his approach and his tenor, there are millions of people that thought, finally, mm-hmm. you know, finally somebody is. Yeah. And then other people, millions of people were kind of repulsed by it, you know, and you don't, you can have policy differences and stuff, but just in terms of approach and personality, and I can't think of another politician that's been, you know, Hillary Clinton, nobody liked it. And so Donald Trump, though, was not that. There's a lot of people that really didn't like him, but there was a lot of people that really did. And man, you don't see a lot of that in American politics.
I can't remember the last politician, or really the last person, that divided people the way he did. Families, siblings. I mean, I remember doing the stories about people like, I'm getting divorced because of Donald Trump. And
yeah.
I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, not who got divorced, but who don't speak any longer because of that.
It's true. And intergenerational issues. And yeah, I mean, it's... you know, Clinton was a divisive, and so was Obama to a lesser extent, but nothing so much like this. Because
right.
of the passion yes. on both sides.
Absolutely. You know?
And because the country has sorted itself out such that there are no longer conservative Democrats,
right.
and there are no longer Rockefeller Republicans
nope.
who are kind of, you know, centrist or center left. And so that's all, you know, with the middle kind of being abandoned, and with the geographic sorting of the country into people, you know, liberals wanting to live in urban cores and inner suburbs and conservatives in exurbs and rural areas. We're now around people who think, you know, so yeah. much like us. And that's further, I think, exacerbated that polarization and contributed to those divisive feelings about Trump.
The yeah. exam is going to be on Thursday, and it's going to be multiple choice.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to do another segment. You guys do another segment?
Sure.
We have a lot more to get to.
I just have to go to my accountant. Crap.
I think we have cash for you today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Get ready for Cardinals baseball tonight as they take on the Philadelphia Phillies. Ameren pregame show 5:10. First pitch 6:05. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
This is the DGS on KMOX.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 334. We have John Hancock from Hancock and Kelly. We have my buddy Jeff Smith, former Missouri State Senator. And I was just complimenting the guys. I loved that last discussion. It's just so refreshing to hear something cerebral, maybe even academic, with a little history to it, as opposed to just screw you. No, you're stupid, which is what we're used to.
I was going to be a college professor. That was my whole aim. I was working on a PhD, piled higher and deeper. And I ended up running for the legislature when I was 24. Wow. So it ended my academic career. But I did teach adjunct at UMSL for a couple of years. And, you know, I loved academics. I love teaching. I love writing. I love research. And so I kind of missed that part of my life.
I learned a lot. I didn't know that the Trump versus Mitt Romney has been going on since the 1840s, basically.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, nothing new under the sun, right?
Right. Right.
Let's talk a little bit about, I don't think this is a left and right thing, although it everything ends up being like that, red shirt, blue shirt. But let's talk about the policing and the shootings how everyone immediately knows what it was and what it wasn't. The attorney for the young 13-year-old who was shot by the police officer is calling it an assassination. John, I'll let you kick it off.
Well, look, you've got a 13-year-old child running around at 3 o'clock in the morning on the streets of Chicago with a gun, firing it, running away from a police officer. I would submit that that is not a good condition to promote your health and safety. The police officer, and I give deference to the police because they're making split-second decisions. And the thing that people need to, I think, reflect on a little bit, there's as much fear on the youth side being chased by a police officer. There's as much fear that that youth has as the police officer has chasing a suspect that is armed in the middle of the night, because one or both of those are quite likely to be shot. And so it's an untenable situation. So for that one, I really don't fault the police officer at all, making that split-second call. There was a gun involved. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I do not fault that police officer for doing what he did in that instance. Now, these other ones, the woman in Minnesota that had thought she had her taser, I mean, that's negligence. You know, it's just, you know, and it's probably criminal negligence. So you've got that situation. And the George Floyd thing, you've got a 9-minute videotape. So, I mean, that's just, you know, there's no defending that, what Chauvin did. But the Chicago situation is different. I think you got to take all of these on a case-by-case basis and put yourself in the shoes of the kid and put yourself in the shoes of the officer. And at least for me, I can't fault that officer in Chicago.
Jeff?
So it doesn't matter if it's 2 o'clock or if it's 3 o'clock or if it's 4 o'clock in the morning. If you immediately obey an officer's orders to put your hands up, you shouldn't turn up dead. So, you know, I think that in all of these situations, in so many of these situations, you just see police applying a use of force or a degree of force that is just not commensurate with the infraction. When you're pulled over for a traffic stop, you shouldn't end up dead. There should, you know, when you're not resisting arrest. So this young kid, you know, we're not his parents. We don't know what's going on in his life. John's right that it's not conducive to your health and safety if you're out and about with a gun at that hour. But he dropped that gun. That gun is on the ground in the video that we've seen, and he puts his hands up. So he didn't deserve to die. That said, I hear what you're saying, John. I did 30 all-night ride-alongs with cops when I was in the Senate. I see the hair trigger decisions that they're forced to make. God bless them for going and protecting our families every day. But that doesn't mean that the use of force we are seeing over and over and invariably, you know, committed against people of color is commensurate with the infraction.
Well, so look, if the officer says stop and the kid stops and he says drop the gun and the kid drops the gun and he says put your hands up and he puts his hands up, then I'm 100% with you. But the kid was fleeing from the police and they were chasing him down an alley, and that officer doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know if that suspect is going to turn around and start firing on him. And he just doesn't know. What he knows is the kid's been shooting a weapon, and he knows that he's fleeing. He knows that he is armed. And so, you know, did he miss the fact that the kid dropped the gun? I would never want to be a cop, number one. But I would hate to be in a situation like that. And it is a split-second decision. I differentiate that from what we saw in the shooting with the officer that thought she had her taser. I mean, you know, that's – I'm sure it was a mistake, but it's not inexcusable. It's an inexcusable mistake. It's a fatal mistake.
Jeff did me a favor by being here today because he was supposed to be on the show anyway to talk about a very cool event that he is helping to put on, that he's put on in the past and we've helped him out with. So take a couple minutes and tell us all about it, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. I appreciate it. And it's, you know, inextricably, I think, intertwined with some of the stuff that we've been talking about. You know, this city and this region, I think we'd all agree, even if we disagree on a lot of stuff, that public safety is probably the biggest challenge that we face as a city. And one of the some of the folks that tend to get caught up in the justice system are people who have already been involved in it in the past. So Through St. Louis University, with the generous sponsorship of Centene, we're putting on a second chance job fair exclusively for people who have been involved in the justice system, who are trying to do right, getting back on their feet. We've got over 50 employers that are committed to doing this. It's a virtual fair right now, given the pandemic, where SLU's Transformative Workforce Academy will put together a pre-selected packet of videos that second chance job seekers make, where they talk about their background, what work experience they've had in their life, how they've overcome adversity, and how they're, you know, what their dreams are, you know. And then you'll get a chance, if you're an employer, to go and look at these videos and pick whoever you want to interview in person. And, you know, if more and more employers do their part and chip in and begin getting some of these people back into the mainstream of economic life in the region, first of all, it's a great source of talent for a lot of people who really are some of the hardest workers, because they'll be very grateful for any employer that will take a chance on them. But more importantly, I think from a regional perspective, if people are unemployed a year after they get out of prison, then they're overwhelmingly likely to go back to prison. If they have a full-time job a year afterwards, they're overwhelmingly likely to stay on the right side of the law. That's good for all of us. So if you're an employer that's interested in taking part in this job fair, then all you have to do is go to a simple little website. The website is, let me just quote it to you, if everybody's ready out there. It is slu.edu/second chance. slu.edu/second chance. So if you're an employer, or if you're a prospective donor that wants to give money, or if you're a job seeker that's looking for another chance, then please visit that site.
I think it's great. I'm a big believer in put up or shut up. And for people like me who don't think that the government should be handing out charity, I think you need to be generous. with your own money. And for people who think that people who have been in trouble with the law need to straighten their lives out and need to go down the straight and narrow and get a job, you need to help them.
And at this very minute, there's like three former governors of Illinois that would make great employees for somebody out there.
Hey, look, I've been free for 10 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Once in a while, I get tempted when I drive by a convenience store late at night. But for the most part, I'm hopefully
you're
a model.
Hold it together.
Yeah.
We're proud of you.
Oh,
thanks,
man.
Dave.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jeff.
Peace.
Good to
great
see you
weekend.
Guys. Thanks.
You're listening to The Dave Glover Show on KMOX.
Welcome back, guys. 350 DGS. Top of the hour, Dave Murray joins us, and I have a cool surprise for Dave. You're going to want to hear him.
Oh, nice.
Hear that. Tones, what do you got?
The saga of the Washington football team continues. That's been the name of the former Washington Redskins.
Which I don't hate.
For the last, and it's one of the options. So,
yeah.
So, at some point, we knew they were going to have to address this and decide if that's their new team name or if they're going to go with something new. And they have started sending out polls, and they've been sending to season ticket holders and like on their website and things like that, asking people what they think, fans what they think. And it's interesting because there's like they've been there. So different Washington football fans have been collaborating and sharing what options they were given, whether it be like an email to a season ticket holder or something that they put in like a newsletter or whatever or on their website. And all in all, it's like 40 different
wow.
options for this team name. Some of them are just bizarre. The First City Football Club. That'd be the name of the team. The First City Football Club. And then it would be shortened to FCFC.
I mean, that's great if it's a soccer team.
It's great if it's a soccer team, yeah. Everything from the Washington Aces.
Stupid.
To the Washington Wild Hogs.
Kind of like that.
There's a lot of, like, the Washington Presidents, the Washington Commanders. But there's so many. The Washington 32 FC.
What's 32?
I don't know. Sure, I should know what that means.
It's 32 football clubs.
Oh, okay.
Is it really?
Yeah, I just clicked on a random article and it was the first thing I saw.
The Washington Capital City Football Club. There's a lot of these in there. The soccer sounding. The Washington, D.C. Football Club. And then it would be shortened to DCFC. Or the Washington Capital City Football Club, which would be shortened to CCFC.
I like the Washington Demon Cats. That's
subtle.
A real one.
Subtle.
Washington Anchors. It's going to be, yeah.
Must be harder to name something than I think.
Well, I think most team names sound stupid when you really
Until
think
you get
about
used
it.
To it.
Think of it, the Los Angeles Lakers. If that wasn't already established, if that was a new thing coming
you're
up,
right.
We'd go, what? That sounds so dumb.
No, you're right.
We're not talking to Chet today, right? Because
no.
they
I hate Chet.
They took the day off in the Chauvin trial and
yes.
We're going to reconvene on Monday and we may get a verdict on Monday. I wanted to ask you a legal question. I wrote this down yesterday and never got a chance to get to it. You've mentioned this in the past, and Chet mentioned it during his talk yesterday about legal experts and trials. And Chet said that he was surprised that the defense didn't bring their own expert to the trial. And he said that he was surprised by that. But then he said something like, this guy's just a cop and he doesn't have a bunch of money and legal experts are a pretty penny. I think that's something that not many people realize
oh, yeah.
is such a big part of...
I don't know if this
like,
is
if
true.
If you want to get an expert and you're in a big trial like that, how much are you spending? And is it just an industry? Is that what these people do?
100%. The guy that... it's usually people, doctors and such who retire. The guy who the defense called was $350 an hour. And I'm going to guess he probably did 100 hours. That's pretty common. Yeah, it's tens of thousands of dollars, which is why when I was working on the defense side, sorry to turn this into a lie, but it's like, Mark Cantor,
mm-hmm.
he has the money to go out there and get experts. When I was a plaintiff's attorney, I did not. So I was trying to fake my way through cases because I was going up against law firms, insurance companies who did. And I was just trying to bluff them because I didn't. So
what do you think about, I mean, the legality of paying for a, not a witness, but testimony.
Mm-hmm.
You're buying testimony.
Yeah.
That, and that feels like it's not right.
And we all know.
And we've, but it's been going on forever.
We call them the W word for prostitutes. You know, we all know who is and who isn't.
But does the jury know?
They have a pretty good BS meter, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm always pretty confident in that. Yeah. But no, it's not the greatest system. It's not the greatest system.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I kind of always knew. I mean, like you said, we all knew. But to hear Chet say it so plainly, like, well, Derek Chauvin's only a cop. He probably doesn't have the money to...
I don't know if it's true, but apropos of that, they're discussing it and they said there's $1 million fund that Chauvin has through the police union or something. Mm. So I'm not sure if that was real or if they spent it or what, but yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.